Hi, this is Paul Puckett, and welcome to Getting There, the money show that focuses on your life. Life, after all, is much more valuable and more important than money. But money is important, and that's why on this show, we pretty much cover whatever we'd like, including some music to illustrate points and give you some pleasurable time not listening to my voice. And we cover, like, anything we want to cover. If you have suggestions on what you'd like me to cover, feel free to email me at paul@gettingthere.life. Today on the show, been an interesting past week. Lots of things happening here in the United States that don't necessarily have anything to do with investing, but they do impact our life. They also, some of the things that we do as human beings, impact our portfolio. Bias is one of those, and so we're going to talk about varieties of bias when it comes to our money. You know, sometimes it can seem that there really are no answers to our questions, and sometimes we don't even know what to ask. So I'd like to start the show with, as you know, one of my favorite artists, Alan Parsons, and a song you may not have heard from the album Vulture Culture. There are no answers, only questions.
Some of us laugh, some of us cry, some of us lay back, watch the world go by. Some of us fear, some of us hate, some of us won't wake up till it's too late. The distance between us is a mystery to us all. The difference between us is so small. There are no answers, only questions, and we're all strangers to the truth. But in my mind's eye, I have found the reason why, and I carry the burden of the proof. Why do we fight? Why do we fall? Why do we stand there, backs against the wall? Why don't we change? Why don't we try? Why don't we turn round, help the other guy? The distance between us is a mystery to us all. The difference between us is so small. There are no answers, only questions, and we're all strangers to the truth. But in my mind's eye, I have found the reason why, and I carry the burden of the proof. And I carry the burden of the proof.
From the lyrics of the song we just heard from Vulture Culture, the Alan Parsons Project, there are no answers, only questions. Some of us fear, some of us hate, some of us won't wake up until it's too late. You know, there are questions we need answers to, and there are answers to those questions, but I love the song and what's behind it because the questions and the answers are different for each one of us. And so just to touch on the events of the past week, I would encourage anybody listening, examine closely your feelings about what you see, and then put yourself in other people's shoes. Whoever you are, there are other people out there. Stick yourself in their shoes and think, how would I look at it from this perspective? To me, the meaning behind the song, There Are No Answers, Only Questions, is that if there was just one person, or if we were all clones and identical to each other, there would be questions and answers we would all agree are correct. But we look at the world through different lenses, and therefore, we don't even agree on the questions, much less the answers. Now, this is the money show that focuses on life. Let's translate our own personal biases when it comes to how we live. And if you're a human being, you have some level of bias. basically based on your life experiences, what you were taught as a child, what you learned from your friends, etc., etc. And don't beat yourself up too much for that. The issue is, are you aware of it? Now, when it comes to investing, let me tell you what it's like to be an investment advisor. Normally, when I meet with people, one of the first things I ask after I spend typically one session just getting to know the person, what are they trying to do? What brings them to this point in their life? What are their long-term plans? Do they have the money to accomplish those plans? If not, do they have the ability to get the money, either through earnings, are they anticipating an inheritance? Preferably not, are they buying lottery tickets? And so whoever I meet, the issue is, who are you? What do you want? What are you trying to do? In the ideal world, what do you want to accomplish? Are you planning on retiring? What does retirement look like? I've said on the show before, and I can't emphasize this enough, people look at their retirement as this wonderful day when they will not be working anymore. And here's the problem. The more successful they are, the harder it is to enjoy not working someday. Because when we're little, one day mom and dad take us to the store, buy us new clothing and a backpack, take pictures of us and wave at us as we get on the school bus, and maybe they're crying or smiling because it's our first day of school. That is a huge transition. But as children, transitions are easy to handle because we're growing up. Our brains are getting bigger and bigger, and so are we. And we can process all those things very simply. So let's move forward 40 years. The more successful you've been, the more habits you've developed that have led to this place where you're very financially successful, and maybe you're even happy, which is more important. And you hit that magical day. They throw the party at the office. These days, you're probably not looking at a gold watch and a pension, but they throw the party at the office, and you head home. And you're so happy you can't see straight. Maybe you have a party with friends that evening, and for a week, maybe, you're just partying because you're so happy you don't go to work. But then one day, you wake up with absolutely nothing on your schedule. That is a very difficult transition for many people. Bad news, guys, particularly men. The more you identify as your job and not you, the harder the transition. What do you say at parties? You know, hey, Paul, nice to meet you. What do you do? I play some golf. I like to walk the beach. I mean, you don't have a ready answer because you don't necessarily have a plan. Planning for retirement is not just the money. It's planning for the time. What are you going to do? What have you always wanted to do and you didn't have time? What can you afford to do? All these things are things you need to consider. And in general, the best person to do that with is either your spouse or definitely yourself. As a professional, I can offer some tips based on things I've seen other people go through. I can certainly help when it comes to the money management portion of you want to travel the world year-round. Well, let's look at the portfolio and see if you can. But the important part, you have to do yourself. You have to figure out, what is it? Who am I? What am I trying to do? What would I like to do? Because life is not an unlimited proposition. It's one of the reasons why it has such tremendous value. We don't even know how much time we have. This is not intended to be a depressing show. As a matter of fact, I found the clients I have that live the longest are the ones that really don't think too much about the fact that life may be short, maybe shorter for some than others. They're too busy doing what it is that gives them pleasure and enjoyment, whether that's helping out their family, playing golf, knitting, going bird watching. It doesn't really matter what the combination is. What matters is it's what you want to do. So I want to emphasize on today's show, regardless of what you see happening in the world around you, regardless of how it impacts you, don't forget the only person who can control what you do is you. Yes, I know the boss can tell you what to do, your spouse can, whatever, but ultimately you're the one making the decision. Now, We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to start talking about bias when it comes to selecting your investment professional and what all investment professionals typically see when we review your portfolio. Joy, joy. Back in a minute. You are listening to Getting There, hosted by Paul Puckett. That's me. This is our disclosure. I am an investment advisor representative of Q1 Advisors, serving clients in Virginia, Florida, and North Carolina. More information on Q1 Advisors can be found at www.q1advisors.com. I am also an independent insurance agent serving clients in Florida and Virginia. More information about me can be found at www.ppuckett.com. Remember, all information shared on the show is not intended to be specific advice because I need specific information about you before I can do that. It's intended to be general. General advice that hopefully you will find helpful. Thank you for joining us. You know, one of the most fascinating things to me is how people pick their professionals, whether it's a doctor, an attorney, an accountant, an investment advisor, a broker, an insurance company, the home repair guy, the company that holds your termite contract. You know, is it somebody mentions you might want to talk to so-and-so? Is it because they're with a large firm and we take comfort in knowing, wow, that's a really big firm, I know I'll be okay? It's tough sometimes when you're an independent advisor because really what I function as and what most independent advisors are trying to do is we function as a guy sitting on your side of the table or ladies, a gal sitting on your side of the table, who are attempting to help you reach your goals in such a way that we're your guide. It's not so much we're the manager, but it's tough to choose somebody who is just on their own, or maybe they have one or two partners at their firm. So you have to look at the underlying issues. Well, here's one of the things I see regularly. I look at a portfolio, and the person will say to me often, and I always wonder, how did you stick with this advisor so long, and did you ever look at this at all? And I understand why they haven't. They made an assumption. They chose the advisor. Why? Because it's a big name firm. How bad can they possibly be? How bad can they possibly be? Now, I'm not talking about one case here. So if you happen to be a client of mine and you think you're putting my stuff out on the air, no, I see this regularly. Hopefully it'll make you feel better. I hope it makes you feel better to know you're not alone. There's plenty of people in this situation, many of whom I've never met. But I always know what's about to happen when during the first meeting, as we transition onto the money, they'll say, man, I just wish the market had done better. I mean, you know, I'm getting close to retirement, or I retired last year, or whatever the case may be, and the market has just been awful. I don't know what to do. Should I go all cash? What, should I pull everything? Okay, here's the problem. I'm sitting on the other side of the table thinking the market has done phenomenally well since 2009. Now, we had two not good time periods. I think the term, you've probably heard them referred to as bear market. The first part of the decade, 2000, really late 99 to the first quarter of 2003. And then again in the end of that decade, very unusual to have that twice in one decade, 2007 through 2009. So since 2009, the market, and I don't want you going to shock, so if you're listening to this on iTunes driving, get a nice grip on the steering wheel, focus. The market's more than doubled. Yes, the beginning of this year we had a little bit of a correction. We may have a bigger one coming at some point. And then you had Brexit, which was supposed to be something terrifying, and then yesterday or the day before, the S&P hits an all-time high. Trying to manage money based on what's happening is a dangerous proposition and usually leads to below average returns. So, how did you pick your advisor? Was it because they were with a large firm? I think that, let's see, three or four statements I've looked at from big firms charging 1.5% to manage the assets. And it looks really good. They must be doing the right thing because the reports are so comprehensive. They're almost incomprehensible, but they're pretty. They have pie charts, lots of colors, and they use big words to describe what's happening in the portfolio. Smart, beta, standard deviation, alpha. Alpha's good, by the way. And you get those reports, and it's almost impossible to read them. Unless you're a professional. And if you're me and you're a professional, I can read it, but I keep wondering, why are you giving this to somebody? These reports, by the way, can be 10 pages at the shortest I think I've ever seen to 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 pages. And I'm not talking about people with millions and millions of dollars. I'm talking about regular everyday folks who've saved a couple hundred thousand, $500,000 for their retirement, and they get this massive statement that shows they own 22 mutual funds and exchange-traded funds and how well they've done and what the performance is without bothering to show the benchmark. So I've seen a little trend from several large firms. How's a 2 to 3% annual rate of return in a balanced portfolio over the past, say, 7 years strike you? Which should horrify you. Markets more than doubled during that time period. Now, international emerging markets are two sectors that add diversification to a portfolio, and during the first decade, they were great things to own. Since 2010 or so, international emerging markets have not done very well. As a matter of fact, they started their decline with the U.S. markets in 07, 08. And then they just didn't come back up. They've continued to perform poorly in comparison to the U.S. market. That doesn't mean you shouldn't own them. It just means the more you have of that, the lower your performance. But even with that in a portfolio, you still should have done 8, 9, 10% over the past 7 to 10 years. Now, the 10 years captures the bear market. And so maybe you're getting down into the 3, but you should definitely have a positive return during that time period. So I urge you, take out your statement from your firm that handles your assets and actually look at that performance number. If you can't figure out, go see a professional. Talk to your accountant. Talk to a different investment advisor. Talk to a financial planner. Talk to somebody that can help you. Compare that return, talk to your existing advisor, and say, hey, how does this compare to a comparable benchmark? When you choose an advisor, the most critical, once you know they know what they're doing, the most critical thing you should look for is chemistry. If you're a Democrat, you probably don't want to see a picture of them shaking hands with Ronald Reagan 30 years ago. And if you're a Republican, you probably don't want to see them shaking hands with Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, or President Obama. You want to have a chemistry so that you trust the person. But the real thing you got to know before that is, do they actually know what they're doing? Just a little thought. Because ultimately, the money is a tool. And you don't want to find out you're not in a position to do what you wish to do. Because the performance of your portfolio has just been, well, shall we say, subpar. I think you should focus on living your life. Life can be short, and the next song may sound a little depressing, but it's from one of my favorite blues men, Otis Taylor, Live Your Life.
Just live. death won't touch you. Won't touch you on your heart. Death will come and knock you. Knock you on your back. Death won't come and touch you. Touch you on your heart. Just come along. Live your life before you die. I just might be for a little while. Water.
Water
and the sharks need salt.
They
need salt and the baby seals. Oh yeah, they know what you're talking about. Just live your life,
live your life
before you die.
Before you die.
All that might be, might be.
And that was Otis Taylor, Live Your Life. I had an awesome experience a few years ago with the second voice you heard on that album. His daughter, Cassie Taylor, who is a musician herself. As a matter of fact, she plays multi-talented. Not only does she sing, she plays pretty much any instrument you see on the stage at a rock concert or a blues concert. And I had the pleasure of hearing her at a great venue here in the Bradenton area. If you're ever visiting Southwest Florida, it's worth the drive. Aces Live is located out on Cortez Road around 79th, behind the 7-Eleven. It's an old barn somebody tore down, brought to Florida from Tennessee, rebuilt. And, you know, it looks like a motorcycle bar or something. But they have great food, great atmosphere. It's air-conditioned, and they bring in great artists. And I was there when Cassie Taylor came to play. And I have to tell you, her dad, I'm sure, is very proud. And if you get an opportunity to hear either Otis Taylor, who's doing concerts again, or his daughter Cassie, or if you're really lucky, both, I highly encourage you to go. One of the things that music does, and it's the reason I like to play it on the show, is it takes us out of whatever it is we're in. And the genre of blues, jazz, spirituals primarily has its background and was brought to us by African Americans. They would sing to get through their day. Now, that's not limited to any particular race, but the blues music I love came from where? It came from people who were having a tough time. That's why they called it the blues. My kids used to say, "Dad, why do you listen to blues? Why would I want to listen to something so sad?" But that's the thing. It's not sad music. It comes from sadness, maybe. But it's uplifting music. And the message of that song is not, hey, life's short, and then, you know. No, the message of that song is, live your life. You've got a limited time frame. Live your life to the fullest. Now, to do that, getting back to biases. Biases affect, often negatively, how we live our life. Why? Well, for one thing, the more biased we are about any given topic, the more tense we get when we see something on that topic. Bias also prevents us from noticing things. This is key. Bias prevents us from noticing things. Why? Well, when we're focused on our bias, we don't listen or see past what's in the way. what we create. Getting back to what we were talking about a minute ago, I cannot tell you the number of times people in my profession sit down and try to figure out, okay, maybe your method of choosing an advisor made sense, but why are you still there? Why are you still there? Your performance, what do you mean to say? And you become very skilled at focusing on the present, which is what all of us should do without bias. Focus on the present, look at what you have, and decide if it needs to be changed based on unbiased analysis. I'm talking about this today because I've just seen several situations where highly intelligent people, they were focused on their life. That's what I tell you to do. They were focused on their careers so they could have the success that they needed and the money that they needed to generate the portfolio that would carry them through retirement. But the management of that portfolio, well, it needs to be monitored. And one of the things I tell people is, the happiest people I know that are investors often delegate some or all of the day-to-day management of a portfolio to a professional. But that doesn't mean they shouldn't pay any attention. Don't look at it daily, but quarterly might be a real good idea. Once a year, a really, really good idea for a more in-depth level. So what I'm saying is, I don't care how much money you have. You don't have to spend 100, 200, 300 hours a year. You can get it done in an hour or two a quarter and then spend a little extra time, maybe 4 to 8 hours, once a year saying, okay, where are we now? And mentioning a couple hours a quarter and 4 hours, that can include your advisor for part of it. It's important to keep track of the money because the money is the tool that provides for your retirement. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, a story I've told before, but I think it's an important one to share again because I'm thinking seriously about expanding the whole investor network. The whole investor network currently is the producer, of this show. It's also the publisher of my two books. The whole investor network was created for that, but also because it's a network. Perhaps it should have members. We'll talk about that after the break. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. Now, I thought about this conversation we're about to have, or this monologue I'm about to do, on the whole investor network. What is it? Why does it exist? What am I planning for it? And what does it do for you right now, other than produce this show and publish two books? It's not really a network so much as the name of a media entity. But here's what the intention was behind the concept of the words the whole investor network. Whole investor, what is that? Well, it means not part. It takes into consideration the fact that all investors that I'm aware of are human. If you're an inhuman investor, please call, and assuming we have a common language, I can't wait to hear what you invest in and what planet you're from. But for the rest of us, we're human. We have bias. We have all sorts of things because we're human. One of the reasons we can enjoy life. So, whole investor. When you look at your portfolio, what I was talking about underperformance earlier, what am I looking at? I'm looking at return. I'm looking at total return. Now, total return has two components. The one that we automatically think of, particularly if we're not retired yet, is called growth, capital appreciation, It can also be loss. It's what the value of your portfolio does from one time period, point in time, to another. Across that time period, what was your total return? Part of that is capital appreciation or loss. The other part that you probably think of immediately if you're retired is yield or income. When you take the two together, let's say the market, your portfolio, say your portfolio grows 8% in value and during the same year received 2% in interest and dividends. 8 plus 2 is 10. Therefore, your total return is 10. We're not going to get into the complications of time, when the money came in, that affects your return. But just in general, point A to point B, that's 10%. 8% from capital appreciation, 2% from dividends. To make sure you understand that point, let's say that you lost 2% and you had 2% in interest and dividends. Then, in essence, nothing changed over the course of the year, with one little minor problem, taxes. So you actually did end up losing a little money because you have to pay taxes on the income. Capital gains, you only pay taxes on when you actually take them. But if you're in a mutual fund, you take them every time they distribute them, because each year, if they have gains, they're going to distribute it out. Okay, so that's what you look at as an investor. Well, what would a whole return be? That's spelled W-H-O-L-E, whole return. Here's the concept that I came up with. Take two investors. Both of them, in a particular year, received a 12% total rate of return. And for purposes of discussion, let's say they both had identical internal components, meaning they both got 9% capital appreciation and 3% in dividends and interest. They basically have identical returns, 12%, right? Well, sort of, but I'm going to tell you a little information that I didn't give you. The first investor is a constant follower of the market. If the market is open, they are on their computer. They have alerts on their stock portfolio. They literally spend 30, 40 hours or more per week managing their own money. There are people like that out there, just so you know. Less these days because of the two rough markets we had last decade. But they are out there. Day traders, people who professionally manage their own money very, very actively. So over the course of the year, don't hold me to this math, the first investor generated a 12% return and spent, for purposes of discussion, 2,000 hours managing the money, reading articles, following the market, buying and selling investments, researching investments, deciding what to sell, what to buy. There are people that do that. I'm not kidding. I'm making it an extreme, but they spend a lot of time. Now, what if I tell you the second investor either hired an advisor or decided to manage the money, but he decided to do it in a portfolio of iShares, for instance, exchange-traded funds. And basically, he spent a few minutes, either with his advisor or on his own, and said, okay, I'm going to do 30% large cap, 15% mid, 10% small, et cetera, international emerging markets, REITs, whatever. And they buy it. And once a quarter, they looked at the performance, and they spent a total of what I recommended a few minutes ago, 10 to 12 hours, the whole course of the year. And they got the same return, 9% in capital appreciation, 3% in dividends, a total of 12%. Now, we have two investors with an identical total return. When I say whole investor, I want to factor in your life, the time you spend doing something that maybe you have to do, but you don't necessarily enjoy, and then redefine your return as whole return. Now, am I doing this so you think you got a better return than you did because of all the free time you had? No. No, I'm doing this so you'll actually think about your life when you all are dealing with your money. So go back to those two investors. They both got the same total return, but one took 2,000 hours to do it. The other one took 12. I think the whole return is capital appreciation or loss, plus dividends and interest, minus time spent, and then you have the whole return. Now, can you actually calculate whole return? Probably. There's probably somebody in the audience who is a math whiz and thinks, what a neat concept. Okay, all I've got to do is assign a value to the time. That's not the purpose. That's not the purpose. The purpose is just to think about the time you spend on your money versus the time you spend doing those things you enjoy, spending time with the people you enjoy being with, family, friends, traveling, whatever it is that you want to do. Because, hey, this is the one show you're going to hear this from. It's all about you. You'll hear that on other shows too. It's important to consider time in relation to your money. And the more you can eliminate your bias on what you invest in and who you deal with from an investment standpoint, the better your decisions will be made, not only relating to your investments, but relating to your time. There must be a song out there somewhere that would illustrate that point in a way that we could all understand. Now, another one of my favorite musicians just happens to have a version of a song that I think you'll find reflects the importance of having your life be more important than your money. Because, you know, the money doesn't mean much if you're not enjoying your life. Basically, it don't mean a thing if you ain't got that swing. Dr. John.
Thank you.
And that was Dr. John, It Don't Mean a Thing. All links to music you hear on the show, which is from YouTube, Creative Commons license, but all links to the artist and their songs are available at www.gettingthere.life, because you should support musicians, artists. Why? Well, because they make your life better. Because you can learn things from the music. Because you enjoy the music. And I got to tell you, musicians, unless they're at the very top of, you know, the industry, are not necessarily making as much as you think. And they deserve more than anybody thinks, in my humble opinion. But that was Dr. John. And links to his music and website you can find at gettingthere.life, along with the other artists today, Otis Taylor and Alan Parsons. You know, I have a lot of fun doing this show because I can look at anything happening currently and hopefully amuse you, entertain you, and it, with any luck, make you think about, ooh, I hadn't thought about that. Now, this will definitely not be the first time you've heard this mentioned on the show. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to feel like one of those biblical prophets walking around with a big sign saying the end is near. Don't get nervous. I'm not talking about the actual end or the end of the stock market or whatever. But have we talked about bonds so far? There's a headline that blows my mind. It really does. There's a headline at marketwatch.com and an article that actually fits the headline, that people are actively investing in bonds for capital appreciation. Okay, if you're going to do that, if you're listening to me right now and you're like, Paul, I don't care what you say, I'm having fun investing in bonds for capital appreciation. I have three things you need to know. Well, A, this is not 1983 when interest rates were way up there. And as interest rates fall, bonds gain value, and therefore, yeah, bonds have capital appreciation, particularly individual bonds that you can sell as they appreciate and hold until maturity so you don't lose your principal value if they fall in value. But of course, most people aren't buying individual bonds. They're buying bond funds. Bond funds, as you've heard me say, oh, I don't know, multiply the number of episodes we've done here on Getting There by a factor like three, and you've heard me say this often, but here I am looking at this headline. Okay, MarketWatch has more viewers than I do. Yeah, hey, I get it. But people are actually doing this? If you're going to invest in bonds in this interest rate environment for the purposes of capital appreciation, I've never been, but I think you have better odds and will definitely have more fun if you do it in Vegas. Roulette, anyone? It is financially insane to be investing in a bond market where the odds of losing money are greater than not. So, for those of you who that headline applies, please take a look at the performance of bonds when interest rates go up. Yes, they can go negative, they can go down, and you will get a return. Positive, that is. But the odds are, if not now, at some point, rates will go up. If they neither go up or go down, you're putting your money in something that's generating maybe 2.5%, maybe. And you have a principal risk that may be in double digits over time as rates go up. So if you haven't heard me or listened to me before on that topic, my apologies if you hadn't heard me repeating it, but I cannot emphasize, I don't care how old you are, I cannot emphasize the importance of getting out of the bond market. Now, high yield bonds, different animal. Why? Because they're not as interest rate sensitive. They're sensitive to economic growth. So I generally always maintain a 5% allocation or so in the average portfolio of high-yield bonds. Why? Well, we get a nice yield. And even though it fluctuates more than the average bond fund, it's not going to fluctuate downward as much when interest rates go up. As a matter of fact, high-yield bonds may actually gain value when interest rates go up because it's an indication of what? Economic growth. Remember that? Economic growth? I always liked economic growth, personally. You know what else I like is music that is uplifting. You know, I may sound a little tired today. I've been driving back and forth to my hometown in addition to doing everything else I do, which is no more than you, maybe. I don't know. But, it, you know, with everything happening, and I avoid watching the news, I think it is more stressful to watch than to listen or read it. But between settling my dad's estate and getting the house sold and now cleaned up for closing and everything that's going on, I don't know about you. I feel like an uplifting song. Now, this time, we're just going to close out the show with the song. The artist I first heard live at an event in Virginia up in the Shenandoah Mountains, J.J. Gray and Mofro. This one, unusual for J.J. Gray and Mofro, starts a little slow, but it picks up towards the end. I Believe, J.J. Gray and Mofro. Y'all have a great week.
In everything, from a river running backwards to a bee when it stings, and I believe in the voices out here telling me to hold on but let go of my fear. A childhood imagination has been my salvation, one cloud at a time. Lord, I'm dreaming. Let me look upon her one more time. This beauty that I love. The strength from my pain, and I believe in what I can't prove, in the joy of not knowing and the misunderstood. Let go of my past, let go of my future, one cloud at a time. Yes, I'm dreaming. Let me look upon her one more time. This beauty that I love. Before she's gone, before she's gone. I believe in everything, in everything. I'm a believer. Beginning.